Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back, and we love having you with us. He's Eric Edholm. I'm Arthur Arkish. Thank you so much for being with us again this week. We are back from the Combine, and Eric, we're ready to dive into free agency, but I don't know what's more exciting anymore, free agency or this new NFL landscape where trades seem to dominate the offseason.
Yeah. Somebody had asked me that yesterday on a radio show I was doing. They said, you know, what's going to be the biggest storyline? And I sort of sat there and thought about it, and we spent all this time talking about all the veteran quarterbacks, and certainly that's something we've never really seen with all the free agents who are, you know, poised to hit the market, and we've got a draft that seems, you know, pretty top-heavy there too. But I really think that the third, you know, chapter of this is definitely the fact that we already have, what, five or six sort of big trades or notable trades, you know, on the book, set to hit in a few days, and we've got more coming. And that seemed to be, you know, the big chatter. I don't know, did you take away that there could be as many or more coming forward in the next, you know, week or 2 weeks?
Yeah, I suspect that they're not done yet, and there have been reports out there linking a lot of other big names. Aqib Talib seems like he's certainly going to be on the move. The Seahawks, and we're definitely going to get him into this. They'll be kind of the thrust of this podcast once we get going here, but obviously Earl Thomas is another big name. So there have been plenty of them floated out there. Jarvis Landry, of course, not even unhappy, but it just seems like those two sides unlikely to get something done under the tag. So yeah, I don't think, Eric, this has been this will be the end of it at all, but we're taping here on Thursday on the heels of course, Michael Bennett getting traded to the Super Bowl champion Eagles from the Seahawks for a couple of draft picks, I think, and then just an hour later or so, Alec Ogletree and his huge contract gets sent from the Rams to the Giants. So lots of activity, and that's, of course, on the heels of Marcus Peters and Alex Smith, and I'm forgetting others, and Robert Quinn. There's just been a ton of huge moves, so it's been sort of the story of the offseason thus far. But, Eric, I buried the lead. The story of the day today is Michael Porter Jr. No, it's not a Mizzou podcast, but we're both Mizzou guys, and damn it, we will get him into this podcast if we so choose. So just your thoughts on getting ready to see Michael Porter for the first time in, what, 2-3 months at this point as the tournament kicks off tonight.
3 months and 15 days, but who's counting? You know, I mean, I have an analogy for this that I actually can't probably share on this podcast. I was sort of joking with a friend over text what this might be like in like dating terms, right? You know, you meet a girl, have a brief fling with her, and then see her like a year and a half later. But it's fascinating, obviously. And my worst fear would be that either he re-injures himself or Mizzou gets bounced from both the SEC and the NCAA tournaments. But yeah, I'll have plenty of football stuff to distract me if that happens. So I'll just go back into my Mizzou-fueled depression after that.
I was going to say, it is Mizzou, so your worst fear will become reality sooner than later, I'm sure. But no, we'll enjoy it while we can. Eric, we're both Mizzou guys. Eric has been following a lot more intently this season in the debut season for Quanzo Martin, and Mizzou obviously doing a lot of big things. But to get this freshman back, who was lost about 3 minutes into the season to back surgery, very exciting. And his brother's been tearing it up, I believe, one co-sixth man of the year in the SEC. So a good year for Mizzou, but we know that's not the reason you guys came to listen to us. This is the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. He's Eric. I am Arthur. Check us out on iTunes. Give us a like while you're over there after you've subscribed, of course. And let's get into it a little bit, Eric. What's your thoughts if this is the end, the quote-unquote end of the Seahawks' little mini-dynasty? One Super Bowl comes out of it. You had Russ under cost control as you found all these gems like Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, all these guys in the later rounds. Bobby Wagner, obviously, you found some guys early like Earl Thomas, and then made all these big trades and free agent signings such as Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril. The way this thing was built up was really impressive. But just sort of your thoughts on it seemingly coming to an end here, and whether Seahawks fans should be left wanting a little bit more, or if that would be too greedy when they kind of look back and look at the ledger of what they accomplished under this group.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to think of it as, you know, the end of one era in Seattle and maybe the beginning of another in Philadelphia, and just, you know, how those paths can overlap slightly with this trade. But yeah, I mean, specifically when it comes to Seattle, I mean, I hear people saying, oh my gosh, you know, Pete Carroll only won one Super Bowl with this group. It's hard to win a Super Bowl, you know, especially when one team has won more than others. And you know, eras don't last as long as they used to before free agency, or even in, you know, sort of the early days of free agency, the first decade until people kind of figured out, you know, the rules, and most teams were on a level playing field and all that. So, you know, I think they had some remarkable achievements. They made two Super Bowls. They were competitive every single year. Even in this year, they beat the Eagles. They had some moments. It wasn't a perfect team. There were a lot of tensions. And it's just so hard to do what the Patriots have done, which is win, you know, multiple Super Bowls in a short period of time. So I think, you know, they didn't maybe max out their potential, but they came pretty darn close. And this is a reboot. You know, they're going to reboot and try to – I mean, if Pete Carroll didn't want any part of this, he would have stepped down a month ago. You know, if he's still energized, and he and John Schneider are going to try to rebuild the roster around Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and a few other guys. And you could kind of see the writing on the wall last year when they drafted four DBs and took Malik McDowell with their first-round pick that, yeah, we could picture life after – you know, Sherman and Bennett and possibly Thomas and maybe Chancellor and maybe Cliff Avril as well.
Yeah, let me be clear here. I'm not viewing this as like a failed mini dynasty, quote unquote, whatever it is.
But some are.
Yeah, exactly. Some are. I think that's being a little too critical here. I mean, they were obviously on the doorstep of a second Super Bowl and made the playoffs, I think, in five consecutive years, dominated the division over that span. It is quite the accomplishment for Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Not easy to accomplish. quite the accomplishment, not easy to accomplish. I guess those probably tend to go hand in hand. But Eric, Russell Wilson, of course, has to be – I mean, if Russ isn't there, Pete Carroll probably isn't there anymore at this point either. You have to think there's – because you've got that quarterback, you know, in place and you feel like you've got the key building block – at least that's what I think. It seems like this pendulum is going to kind of potentially shift. I know Pete Carroll is a defensive-minded head coach, but couldn't you envision a scenario where this really now finally truly becomes Russ's team and maybe the identity shifts a little bit too?
Absolutely. And I think it was starting to shift last year. And obviously, you know, you saw them make a ton of coaching changes as well. The assistants, I think they have four new assistants or five. I have to, you know, go back and look the number. But, yeah, I mean, they're changing, you know, especially on offense, but defense as well. And you know, bringing in some new blood, locker room change, culture change, all that stuff. It all goes kind of hand in hand. And they've got to do Russ favors now. I mean, if you don't keep Paul Richardson, fine. Then invest in the offensive line. Find the right combination there. Get him the run game he needs. And you know, if that's Chris Carson and somebody else, okay, then work around that too, and make sure you keep Doug Baldwin happy. You're going to lose Jimmy Graham possibly, and so there's just it's great to say all that we're going to build around Russ, but you actually have to do it. And so some of these young players they've drafted, you know, they had a ton of middle round picks last year. They've got to come through and step up. So I'll be fascinated to see how it all looks, but I'm in no way, even if they take one step back this year, I still think that the long-term prognosis for the team can be very good.
Yeah, I think so too. They've proven to be you know, one of the league's better franchises and very well-run, obviously, with Schneider and Carroll working well hand-in-hand there. It didn't always seem like it would be that way, but they've obviously managed to make it work and seem to have a good thing. Eric, before we kind of move on, let's spend a couple more minutes on the Seahawks. What do you think? Are there cautionary tales that other teams can maybe take, though, from this? And maybe even before we go there, let me ask you, because it's kind of a copycat league, how big of trailblazers were Pete Carroll and John Schneider? How big do they continue to be? Because if we're going to talk about all these crazy trades, we can't do it without mentioning Seattle has been doing it for years. Whether it was Percy Harvin, I know that wasn't a long-term successful trade, but he did help them win a Super Bowl. And there have been other moves, too. They've been very active in the draft, but also in free agency as well. And then there's the whole aspect of you get the cost control quarterback and you're able to build on around him right away, or you're able to kind of allocate your resources elsewhere right away to see if you can build this thing up. There's the whole long cornerbacks that other teams have tried to mimic. So I feel like Seattle has done a lot to kind of lay out a blueprint that a lot of other clubs have tried to sort of mimic since.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely true. And you know, you look at Carroll's coaching tree, it's spread out pretty well with guys like Dan Quinn doing well. I know that, you know, Gus Bradley wasn't a success as a head coach, but he did good things as a defensive coordinator. You know, obviously Lane Kiffin kind of grew up under him and other, you know, good college coaches, Anthony Lynn. And, you know, so you just start with that. And I think there's a lot of respect for what they've done. And you see a lot of their defensive principles used around the NFL. And then, you know, John Schneider coming off of that Green Bay front office tree. You know, I still think there's a strong amount of faith in what his approach has been, even with the mistakes they've made. And yeah, I mean, right, the Harbin trade didn't work out the way they expected. The Jimmy Graham trade didn't work out the way they expected, but they went for it. They made bold moves, and you know, they weren't afraid to sort of cut ties and admit their mistakes when they had them. So, you know, just the ability to kind of turn the page on stuff has been a strong element of what they've done. And yeah, I think this season, you know, it's kind of the wildfire theory, right? You kind of have to burn down the forest a little bit for it to regrow.
Sure.
That's sort of what I see here with this team. And I don't think taking a small step back is necessarily a bad thing for 2 and 3 years down the road.
Yeah, it's a great point. And thank you for kind of helping jog my memory with the Jimmy Graham trade. I knew there were some big ones. I was drawing a blank on which ones. But I think it's the more overarching point that they were always they've been very aggressive. And maybe that's a good transition to Howie Roseman's Eagles, because certainly that's what positioned them to get to where they were, winning a Super Bowl last year. And obviously, it reminded me, Eric, as soon as I saw the trade for Bennett yesterday, the first thing I thought of is the Patriots 13 months ago trading for Brandon Cooks and Dwayne Allen and Coney Ealy within about 5-6 weeks of winning the Super Bowl. So maybe it's just this kind of, I don't know, go for it mentality that's starting to increase around the league. If you got this thing built up, you might as well go for it. And we can get to the Giants too here in a minute with Alec Ogletree. Yeah. And how it gets to, you know, back to Eli Manning and what David Gettleman's planning there. But yeah, it's a lot of fascinating stuff going on here for sure. My last point on the Seahawks, I know we're kind of spraying to all fields here, but what about Earl Thomas, Eric? Obviously, you know, last year, very publicly, finds himself in the Cowboys locker room after the game, telling them to go get him if they can. Like Richard Sherman, he enters a contract year. Unlike Richard Sherman, he's not coming off multiple Achilles surgeries. And I would imagine that for that reason, primarily, the view around the league is that Earl Thomas is still a lot greater of an asset potentially on the trade market. What do you think happens with him? And what about Sherman? Are the Seahawks really doing him a solid by saying they're going to release him and give him a choice between 31, even 32 clubs? Or do those Achilles surgeries and his big contract mean that's kind of the only route they can go with this one?
Yeah, I tend to think it's more of the latter. Obviously, yeah, there's a great amount of respect. But yeah, sure, I think obviously it would be hard to trade him and find a right spot for him that would limit the number of teams, and I just don't think it would be feasible. So, yeah, I think it's more likely that's the route they go. And, you know, we'll see if Thomas is entertained in trades, because obviously, you know, it's the kind of thing where you stand to lose him otherwise. But, yeah, I mean, it's a lot to put on one group to lose all those guys, because we certainly don't know about Chancellor and Averill. And, you know, it looks like Sheldon Richardson could walk as well. I mean, they'd lose a ton, but they'd also make up for it next year in terms of compensatory picks and stuff, and they could get something for Thomas. I don't know. I mean, there's so many fascinating possibilities here that, you know, that I think a smart team would be wise to come in with a moderately strong offer if they feel like they can keep him long. I mean, Earl Thomas just does things that other safeties don't. I mean, he can change the way you play defense. So, this, if you smell blood and you have the means to do it, I think it's a great time to maybe pounce and throw him a solid offer.
Earl Thomas, 28 years old, will be 29, entering his ninth season. Very durable, at least until the past couple of years. Not to say he hasn't been durable. He's just had a couple things pop up, but played 16 games in his first six seasons. And, yeah, I think is still universally considered, if not the league's best safety, he's certainly a 1B, 1C, can do it all out there. It'll be fascinating to see. And then I guess one more quick Seahawks point, Eric. they probably don't go out and trade for Sheldon Richardson if Malik McDowell's first NFL offseason isn't such a complete disaster. The second-round pick from Michigan State gets in the ATV accident, has a concussion serious enough to sideline him for the whole rookie season. That's one more interesting element here. You mentioned Shaq Griffin. They went out and got a bunch of DBs last year, as we saw the writing on the wall. I'm trying to remember, Tedrick Thompson, I believe, was among them, Mike Tyson, a bunch of mid-round DBs. But I'm guessing that Malik McDowell's status has to complicate things as Sheldon Richardson inches closer to free agency, and now with Michael Bennett officially out of the locker room and off the books for them.
Yeah, you just don't know what to expect out of him. You know, the ATV thing was bizarre, and it was more bizarre, too, just the way the club sort of painted it and how I don't remember hearing Carroll's specific words on him at the combine, but it didn't, you know, there's still a question of like, how much can this guy realistically contribute? But Griffin was a hit. They also got the Michigan safety, Delano Hill.
Yep.
You know, other guys as well. You know, I think you mentioned Thompson. I liked him coming out. I thought he was maybe one of the more underrated guys of that Colorado secondary a year ago. Just trying to think of who else. I don't know. That draft class doesn't
look good. Delano Hill from Michigan. I think you said him already. Yep.
And Tyson, you mentioned the all-name team in my draft. yeah, he was one of my – I think he was my starting safety or corner last year. But, yeah, right. Yeah, so they obviously have some depth there. We just don't know what to expect about some of these guys. And you know, Mara Darbo, they drafted at receiver. Chris Carson had, you know, four great games for him. So – this draft class could actually be very good for him if Dowell does something. You know, the Ethan Pochich, the interior lineman, I guess. I don't know what you do with him, but there's a lot of big questions. And the potential is there for that to be a really good draft class. I just don't know how good it really is.
All right, let's go across country, Eric. Now, I mentioned the Alec Ogletree deal with the Giants, and obviously the other side of this Bennett deal is with the Eagles. I guess let's, you know, the champs come first. Your initial reaction to learning that Howie Roseman was taking on more salary and getting it. I should probably tee it up another way. Howie Roseman was continuing to build upon the NFL's best defensive line and giving Fletcher Cox a Michael Bennett after he went and got him a Tim Jernigan last offseason. It's obviously an embarrassment of riches for the Eagles. But is there a big cut coming? Is Nick Foles have to be traded now? How do they make this all work under the cap when they already had work to do prior to this trade?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. And Vinnie Curry is probably...
Good as gone, you'd think.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
Torrey Smith, you know, maybe it's the end of Brent Celek's time there.
Yeah.
You know, those are probably the big three, unless I'm forgetting some. Jason Peters would be a huge one. I think they're still expecting him to come back, and I don't see them just sort of dropping him like a bad habit.
Yeah.
But you're right, Foles would be the wild card in that scenario. We heard word that, okay, there's some teams that have come in with sort of medium offers on him, second-round pick or whatever, and, you know, maybe a team like the Arizona Cardinals or the Buffalo Bills or the New York Jets, somebody like that. I think those are the teams that would be most interested in him. Yeah, I mean, maybe if they come up on their offer before draft day, this thing happens. And you know, if the Eagles feel like there's a veteran quarterback they could bring in as a free agent who's cheap, who could be kind of this year's Foles or Case Keenum, where you get him for a year and $3-4 million or whatever, that would be a good swap for them. And sure, they could recoup some of that draft pick and save some of that cap space. So, yeah, I think right now they're picking first round and then not again until the fourth or fifth. So they've got a big gap there, and they may want to, you know, replenish a little bit of that.
Yeah, it's a good point by you. I hadn't thought about, you know, if you do end up dealing Nick Foles, maybe you find another bargain guy. That's what Nick Foles obviously was initially. They had the big offseason with Chase Daniel on the heels of Sam Bradford and Carson Wentz. So, you know, I guess they're keeping options open, but I think we've said it on this podcast, and I still feel very strongly about it. I think Howie needs to find a way to hold on to Foles until the summer and see who this year's Bridgewater or Tannehill might be. And not only that, Eric, but again, as we've mentioned on this podcast, Carson Wentz can't be just considered a slam dunk to become, you know, immediately the MVP candidate he was in December before blowing up that knee. Remember, that was a late season injury, and that does affect the rehab time. So kind of a lot of moving parts there for the Eagles, but these all have to be considered good problems to have for the Super Bowl champs, and I have no question about the fit, both locker room wise and on the field, with Michael Bennett joining that team. It's going to be very exciting for them. And we'll just have to see how he makes it work. I'll be very interested to see. What about the Giants, Eric? Greg Gabriel has been screaming from the mountaintop to anyone who will listen that David Gettleman is not spending the second overall pick on a quarterback, that the Giants are going to try and build this thing up around him, maximize his remaining years with Eli Manning. In the acquisition of Alec Ogletree yesterday to take on that huge contract and to send off draft picks when a lot of people think you have to rebuild this thing, although clearly, again, it doesn't look like that's what Gettleman's thinking necessarily. Sort of your thoughts on where the Giants stand and whether you agree with what appears to be Gettleman's approach kind of as he returns to this front office.
Yeah, they're sitting there with five draft picks right now, and you know, Dave Gettleman, you know, raised himself as kind of a, you know, a blue blood scout. I'm sure they'll do some good work in undrafted free agency and all that. But yeah, I think they want more than five draft picks. I don't think this is a, you know, we're all in for 2018, but I think Greg's onto something in that they haven't shown a lot of signs that they're super excited to just scrap this thing down. I think they feel like there's still some time to help Eli out. That's why I think, you know, look, either you take a Saquon Barkley at two if he's there. It's crazy to say that if he's there, but right. Or you trade down and recoup some picks and you take Quentin Nelson or whoever. I mean, I don't know if that's a possibility with the quarterback derby up there. But, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is kind of fascinating. You think in theory, healthy Odell Beckham, healthy Sterling Shepard, Evan Engram, a quality running back, Eli, some offensive line help. They're probably going to go get Andrew Norwell in free agency and, you know, at least one more draft pick at the position. Okay, maybe that's not a bad offense. You know, they could be pretty darn good. You know, those just, you could send four verticals a couple times a game and do some work there. I think that would work if they have the protection. So, yeah, and Ogletree fits a need, man. You saw them trying to cover tight ends last year. It was terrible. So he and B.J. Goodson are a pretty good little duo there. And, I mean, it's not great depth, but I think they'll be better at red zone, third down, middle of the field. That's really where their big defensive problems are. And James Betcher's a good one. He'll figure out how to use them.
Yeah, I think so too. The worst kept secret, obviously, in fantasy football last year was play your tight ends against the Giants defense, obviously. Right. And Alec Ogletree's acquisition has to be a part of that solution, you would think. And hard not to also kind of, you know, to view Alec Ogletree sort of that hybrid linebacker safety type of player, fitting in well with what James Betcher did in Arizona there with Deion Buchanan and kind of the type of player he may be looking for, sort of an undersized, speedy dude. So yep. It'll be interesting to see how that fits. But again, it is a big contract and it is a little curious. You'd think it has to raise a bit of a red flag heading back across the opposite coast now. What's with the Rams change of heart? You make that extension in October and then you're ready to be done with him 4 months later? We haven't seen anything like that in a while that I can really think of, have we?
Yeah, it's a little bizarre, right? You know, you give this guy big money, you clearly invest in him, and yet down the stretch, as much as they loved Ogletree, because it gave him, you know, he was a great leader in the locker room, I think it was pretty obvious at some point that, you know, Wade Phillips, if it was up to him, he likes him as a player, but he's not a perfect fit in the scheme he wants to run. And you want to re-sign Aaron Donald and Marcus Peters and, you know, Sammy Watkins and LaMarcus Joyner and all these guys, well, you got to give up some big salaries. So they're kind of admitting a mistake in terms of how much they gave to a 228-pound linebacker or whatever. And they're staring the same thing with Mark Barron, too. I mean, they can't give up both of them, I wouldn't think. But, you know, investing both and giving them money was probably a mistake. And as good of players as they are, it's not a, you know, indictment of their talent. It's just more of a, boy, financially speaking, it wasn't the wisest thing to do. And now they're realizing, hey, okay, we're in a situation where if we lose it, you know, any of those three guys or the four guys I just mentioned, they're in trouble. They tag Joyner. They know they're going to keep him. Now it's a matter of what else they can do with the rest of the roster and try to keep as much of that as, you know, together as possible.
With all due respect to Sammy Watkins, Eric, if I hear one more time that this moving of Ogletree is to make sure they sign him, and maybe it is, but if Aaron Donald is getting ready to not get paid again and hold out, I will not understand that for the life of me. I'm not trying to pretend that these are easy decisions when you're getting ready to dole out a record defensive contract, but I just cannot envision a scenario where they let Donald play on the final year of that rookie deal. Can you?
No. Yeah. And when I said they're going to try to resign him, I think they're going to put an effort forward to try to keep him. I think there's also a number that they will not go above. And I think it's going to be a pretty hard number. And if some team comes in with $100 more, they're going to say, all right, we tried, you know, we'd love to have him, but as good as Sammy Watkins can be, and he made some explosive plays last year, he was kind of a decoy of sorts, even with those big plays, you know? And I'm with you. I don't think he's a special receiver. I understood the reasons behind the trade. I understand their desire to keep him and think, okay, if he is healthy with another year with Goff, he could be good. But you're right. This trade was not made for that alone. You have to look big picture. Donald, Peters in the next year or so. Those guys got to get paid too. You don't make those trades, right, or you know, potentially lose. Who are we talking about now? Aaron Donald. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's stupid business if they do that.
Yeah, Les Snead was candid at the combine last week, saying he had hoped that getting Sammy Watkins for the second rounder from Buffalo would be more than a 1 year rental. That was kind of the understanding. They tried. Yeah. Make it a long-term marriage, but at the same time mentioned, you know, we do potentially get a compensatory pick in 2019 if we can't make it work. And we all know that Aaron Donald has to be priority 1B, you know, 1, 2, and 3 there. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. Just a couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He's Eric Edholm. I'm Arthur Arcus. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe while you are over there. We've been kind of trying to spray to all fields. It's been a crazy week in the NFL. What else is new? Lots of trades, free agency right on the horizon. Haven't really talked any franchise tag activity, but Eric, there was news, I believe, Wednesday night. Le'Veon Bell confirmed. This is another of the worst kept secrets. He had threatened to potentially retire or sit out the year if he was tagged again by the Steelers. I think we all kind of rolled our eyes at that suggestion, but he did say last night, and I apologize, can't remember who he told, that he would, if he doesn't get a long-term deal, he would sign the tag, likely hold out again throughout the offseason, but he is going to play in 2018, likely for the Steelers. Just kind of your thought on this dance and its latest development between Pittsburgh and their all-pro running back, but quite a volatile running back, Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, it's going to be year to year. I mean, that's just how I think they're going to look at it. I suspect that you know, it was weird listening to Bell kind of sort of waver on his message. Oh, I wasn't really serious about holding out. Well, yes, I kind of am. Yeah, I'll be there week one. Well, maybe I'll hold out. And, you know, it's gone back and forth. I think he knows this is a special place and that he can do great things and that he's on the verge of earning nearly $27 million between last year and this year. I don't know too many running backs who gain that much in a two-year period. I can't think of any other than maybe Adrian Peterson over the last, you know, decade or something like that. So,
right.
You know, that's just sort of where we're at. And it's probably 50-50 at this point whether he's going to be with the team in 2019. And we could just sort of go through this Kirk Cousins-like, you know, wait-and-see approach. And I don't know. I mean, the good thing is that for the most part, the language coming out from both sides has been pretty positive, and there's still some optimism that something can get done. But now they have a little harder deadline here, July 15th. We'll find out, or July 16th, I guess. But I've wavered a little back and forth on whether I think this is still a long-term possibility, but I can't rule it out.
Yeah, it is kind of tough to get a read on, and you know, just all the extra layers, Bell's workload, Bell's injury history. I don't know. I still lean toward they don't find a way to get a long-term thing done, but it's hard to say. I also didn't think they were going to tag him again, and that shows you how much I know. I thought maybe in this special running back class, maybe someone like a Darius Geis would be a great long-term replacement for Bell, and maybe he still will be. But I just don't know. It's hard to get a feel on that one. All right, Eric, on the way out, I'm kind of going to put you on the spot. I didn't really I didn't give you an opportunity to let you know a curveball was coming, so I apologize for that. But
yeah, thanks for that.
I think that we're going to do some rapid reaction podcasting next week if there are some giant signings or trades, just to make sure we can get to you guys with our reactions as soon as possible. But is there one player in free agency, one team in free agency that kind of interests you? We did the whole series on our most interesting free agents, and I hope our listeners will go check that out at profootballweekly.com under the free agency tab. But just circling back on that idea, is there one either power broker team-wise or one guy? I mean, clearly Kirk Cousins is the power broker among players, but I don't know. What's the next unpredictable layer here, or what are you kind of most interested to see when the free agent bell actually goes off early next week?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, you know, a lot of focus on the teams that have the most cap space, the most ability to do stuff, which would be, what, the Browns, the 49ers, the Colts. I mean, there's really, you know, a handful of teams. Yeah, and I was just going to say, I think the Bears are one of those teams that are sort of quietly gearing up. You know, they're sitting there with, what, $60-plus million. The Houston Texans are another team that I've heard, especially them not having first and second round picks. I've heard them maybe making a play for Nate Solder. You know, they lost Dwayne Brown last year. Don't really know what they have at left tackle. The Titans, I've heard, could be sort of moderately aggressive. They're another team. I don't know the exact cap space, but I think they're in kind of the $45, $50 million range. So those are a few teams sort of beyond that. You know, obviously the Jets would be in that discussion too. Again, I don't remember their exact number, but they're in the, you know, $80, $90 million range too. So, you know, the Bucks are in a weird spot. You know, that it's going to be the final year of Dirk Cutter's reign unless he improves dramatically. I mean, he barely survived this year, it seems like. So they've got to be aggressive, I would think, to find defensive back help, pass rush help, maybe a running back who can do something as well. And so, yeah, those are kind of the team, obviously, outside the big stuff like, you know, Cousins and whatnot. I think those are a few teams that could surprise some people with their aggressiveness. You mentioned the Bears. I'm glad you did. I know there's a Bears podcast too, but they're one that you've heard little whispers from agents that they've kind of been sniffing around some guys.
And I will that's a good tease. Thank you. We will get into our Bears podcast here. We're going to tape within the next hour, and I thought we'd do a real good breakdown of Sammy Watkins versus Allen Robinson. We'll dive into the Kyle Fuller debate, so definitely check that out too if you're looking for some Bears talk. I'm going to go on the flip side, Eric. I think interesting clubs will also be the ones that still have some tightening of the belt to do just to be players in free agency. What's going on with the Miami Dolphins? They acquire Robert Quinn. Does it mean that Ndamukong Suh's time there is coming to an end? What about the Cowboys? We know that they, you know, they tagged DeMarcus Lawrence, but they've got to find speed at wide receiver. They still need help all over the defense. Is Dez Bryant's time coming to an end? So I'm curious to see some of these other clubs. And we mentioned the Eagles at the top, obviously, way, way over the salary cap and just took on another huge contract. The Eagles and the Dolphins, kind of interestingly similar in that way. But those teams will be interesting, too. The Baltimore Ravens don't have a ton of money to spend, but we know it's Ozzie Newsome's last stand. There's GM. They need help. So I'll be looking at some of those clubs and how they're able to massage the cap and sort of target their needs before the draft approaches as well. We will be covering it all at profootballweekly.com. And we appreciate you being with us on this podcast. And that's going to do it for today. He is Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish. Thank you again. Happy Michael Porter Jr. Day. Happy almost weekend before free agency begins day. And we're looking forward to breaking it all down on the PFW podcast next week, and make sure you keep it locked in at profootballweekly.com.